All right, I don't know how long I have, but yeah, I'm going to be faster than anyways that I'm supposed to be. If I'm too fast, if I'm doing something you don't like, wave your hands, I'm happy to ignore you. And it's like, you know, living in London is always my favorite when people like, you get so used to not seeing other people because you have to, you know. I love the people that stand at the end of escalators, for example. You know, the thing is rolling and they're just looking around like, where am I? Like, get out of the way. All right, as we're late, I hope you're keeping time. That's good to keep me on my toes here. We're also on the interweb, so if you do inappropriate things, your mom will hear about it. So make sure that you behave yourself in the audience. But so far, you've all done it, so it's quite good. So how's the vibe going? You're happy so far? I find some of these talks very hard to follow because they're in Portuguese. But other than that, it seems to be a good mix of things so far. So I'm going to talk about fixing the web and JavaScript gaps. And I mostly will talk about JavaScript because I'm super excited about JavaScript. And it's been the thing that made my career on the web for quite a while. I started with Perl. Well, I started with assembly language and then went into Perl and then I did HTML and JavaScript and then CSS came around. But JavaScript has been the thing that always kept the web together for me. And it's also the thing that has been abused the most on the web because people use it for everything instead of just understanding where its role is in the whole system that we have out there. So JavaScript is an incredibly versatile language. It's a very badly architected language. It was done in 10 days. It just had to be rolled out there really quickly. So it is a thing that does a lot of things and not all of them the way people expected it to do. So it broke a lot of conventions and it started a few trends that other languages didn't like too much, but that's fine. It's available web-wide and across many platforms. That's what I like most about it. I didn't have to worry which operating system I was on. All I needed was a browser that understood JavaScript, and all of them do. Ever since like Netscape 3 and things like that. So the browsers that I had, out of a sudden, I could do things offline without having to have a server or without having to have a local host. I could do things on the people's computers with JavaScript, and that was pretty cool. It's toolset independent, so you didn't have to get a copy of Borland C Builder or something like that. You just needed a text editor and you can write JavaScript. And that was amazing because you didn't have to find a friend who had a pirated version of Borland C Builder or buy it. It's forgiving and inviting, so the syntax is not as strict as other languages. I can turn a variable into whatever I want, and I can overwrite things, or I can define the same thing 5 times. I don't have to define how big my array is before I use it, and add to the array randomly. It's pretty nice. And you can use JavaScript for all kinds of things, in browsers, on the web, on the server, in applications, to access services, as a data format, JSON, JavaScript object notation. On hardware, there's the Tesla, and there's all kinds of other things that run JavaScript. And it's your turn, surprise me. Put it on your cat, put it on your dog, run your house on it, whatever you want to do with JavaScript. It's a very simple to learn language, so it's probably better than using anything that's embedded in systems that might get outdated really quickly. And JavaScript is in super high demand. You can find that by doing a Google search for undefined is not a function. So everybody who came from another language gets that error all the time. My favorite was Internet Explorer 6 when it gave you like undefined is not defined and you're like, that's too philosophical for me for a browser. You know, you want me to fix the error or have a discussion with me here? You know, this is not right. It's a quick reminder that JavaScript is pretty much the odd one out, because whilst JavaScript is running the whole web right now, it is actually not a good language for the web. And that always, when I say that to people, like, what? What do you mean by that? The problem is that HTML and CSS are designed to be fault tolerant. That means if you make a mistake, the end user doesn't get punished. So if you forget to close a p tag, the browser closes the p tag. If you put an div inside a UL, it moves the div outside the UL. So it makes a lot of assumptions for you. The CSS parser is the same thing. If you put a line in CSS that is not valid, the CSS parser goes like, whatever, and goes on to the next line. The JavaScript parser goes like, oh my god, I'm on fire and I'm dying here. I'm not going to do anything anymore. I'm not talking to you. So this is the difference between those two languages. This is a great example for that HTML has a data list in HTML5. So you have an autocomplete. So you type something in a field, and it gives you the results as you go along. And that one means that a browser that doesn't do data lists, like older browsers, just gets an input element, which is not the same thing, because in essence, it's just a select box where that gets the values for you. So using understanding the fault tolerance of HTML, you can do something interesting here. So this one now means if the browser understands a data list, this select element is illegal inside the data list. So it basically doesn't render it at all. It just renders the options of the data list and gives you the automated autocomplete. If the browser doesn't know what a data list is, it just shows the select box. So by understanding HTML, you can make the browser do different things. And in CSS, you can do the same things. In JavaScript, on the other hand, if there's any error, this is the kind of functionality that you get. And the amount of times you just stand there and just like, did something happen now? Or is it still loading? Or what's going on here? It's not fun. And it's just annoying people to no end. Because one little mistake and nothing shows up. One little mistake can be done. And the problem with JavaScript mistakes is that that they can happen. And whenever I talk about people like, you cannot rely on JavaScript, and they always come up like, well, it's only the people that turn off JavaScript. And we all know that only paranoid freaks turn off JavaScript. But not really. There's a guy, a good friend of mine, Stuart Langridge, used to be at Canonical. He has this great website that shows you all the bits and bobs that can go wrong before JavaScript executes on the machine that you're supposed to execute it on. And there's all kind of stuff that can interfere with it. I'm not going through it right now. But there is, for example, internet providers that minify your JavaScript, things that the HTTP request doesn't go. There's a clash between two libraries. So many things can go wrong. And as JavaScript is not fault tolerant, it basically says, meh, and I'm not giving you any content. So if you rely on it, you have a problem. And far too many websites nowadays rely on JavaScript to render content out. And especially that's interesting when you think about the next million or billions of people coming on the internet. They're coming from markets where they're right now using proxy browsers. They're not using IE, Chrome, or these kind of things. They're using Opera Mini and QC2 and all the other browsers that take your content, execute JavaScript when it's less than 3 seconds execution time, and other than that, it cuts off JavaScript. It minifies your CSS. It optimizes your images, so you don't even know what's ending up on the end user's computer or mobile phone. But it's something they can consume. Whereas, like, the connections are so bad in these countries that our massive applications wouldn't run there. So relying on JavaScript is not a sensible idea, and it kind of sounds familiar because. When XHTML was a thing, remember when XML was really cool? It never was, but when we said XML was really cool, one little mistake in our HTML and the page would show this yellow arrow. And people were just like, okay, I must have done something wrong. And no, they didn't, you did. But or you probably didn't. It was like a third-party provider that put something in your page that you didn't want to have. But we as developers stood up and say, like, XHTML2 is not a thing that the web should do. So we invented HTML5 to be much more fault-tolerant. And now we make the same mistake, just by relying on JavaScript, because it's more convenient for us as developers to do everything in JavaScript because we got full control over it. Whereas, like, the when I showed earlier, the fault tolerance of HTML and CSS is something that many developers don't feel happy about because they don't want browsers to do magic for them. They don't want to rely on something that they don't know how it comes out. But in the end, the internet is all about not knowing what your end users can do to your environment. Be as paranoid as you can be in your coding and you will have happy users. Imagine them to do something or ask them to do something and you will lose users. JavaScript abuse is kind of rampant. This is the nasa.gov website, and this is the experience that you get when you're online. You have first white, then you have 7 seconds of darkness to show you how beautiful space is. And then you have some blocks coming in, then you have some spinners telling you that something is loading, and then after 16 seconds, you basically have the website available to you. And the average user, after 3 seconds, feel like something's wrong with their mobile phone and start swearing at their mobile phone provider or reloading your page 10,000 times. I always love it when websites have loading problems and people are like, keep reloading, that's probably the best thing to do to fix that. You know, thank you for pressing that button 216 times, you solved the problem. So NASA.gov is 3 megabytes of blocking JavaScript before the first thing hits the page. And this is not bad developers. This is probably just a product manager telling them this has to go live tomorrow. And they actually put jQuery and Ember into one JavaScript file and put it in the head rather than at the end of the document and didn't even minify it. So this is why this thing takes 16 seconds on my 100 megabit connection in England back home. And it was just fascinating for me to see that these things keep slipping through. I remember the last Apple website was like 36 meg or something and 512 resources because we all on fast connections when we build things, but our end users are not. So feel a bit like your end users. Almost every developer tool allows you to throttle the connection and simulate slower connections, and that's a really, really good idea. Facebook do it internally now, the 2G Tuesdays, I think it's called, where they do the connection of the internet. They make it much, much slower so people feel the pain of end users out there. Might be just a ruse to save some money on connectivity, but that's what they do. And this is one big issue we have in the web community. JavaScript is too powerful for its own good. You can do everything with it, so of course people do everything with it. It's almost everything that goes wrong can be controlled and to a degree fixed with JavaScript, and we've done that every single time. Every time there's a new functionality in the browser, like Chrome does something amazing, somebody will write a JavaScript library to make that available for all the browsers out there, which sounds like a clever idea, but then we have another library in the mix, and then we add another one, and we add another one, and in the end we have these 12 megabyte websites, and we didn't know what happened. Because we tried to fix or give functionality to browsers that were never meant to have that functionality. So think about enhancing rather than just giving everything to every browser out there. It's not your job to make Internet Explorer 6 stay alive and do things on the web. It's your job to give it something that works, and that might be a form that reloads on every click. That's much, much better than a 15 megabyte JavaScript thing that does not work at all in that browser. With old IE users, don't give them beautiful interfaces. They're confused by those. They don't want it, they're not used to them. They just expect things to work with three clicks rather than with one. And it leads to people relying on libraries and frameworks. The amount of people when I interviewed people in Mozilla or in Yahoo, and I'm like, okay, I need a JavaScript developer for working on Firefox. Yeah, I know jQuery. Why are you here? Did you really think the browser is written in jQuery? No, it's not. It's in JavaScript. But people rely on these as their knowledge. We use code we don't understand to fix issues we don't have. Learning libraries and frameworks beyond Hello World costs time and money. Everything is like a Hello World. Look, in 12 seconds you can make a to-do application. And you're like, well, that's lucky for you if your clients need to-do applications. There's not too many out there. But once you start getting into the nitty-gritty of the libraries, you have to spend much more time on them. And it's time you don't spend looking at optimizing your own code, because you're not thinking about your main product any longer. You're thinking about how do I use the library in its best way. In essence, we value developer convenience over user experience. And this is terrible because in the end, we're a delivery company. Every one of us is a deliverer. Our end users have to be happy. This is what we should be doing. Everything else is irrelevant. If it takes me 2 weeks to build something that works across all the different form factors and disabilities and connection speeds, that's a much better time than spending 3 days and rolling it out and then subsequently having to spend 6 months to actually fix it one after another. Building libraries and frameworks that magically fix things has become kind of fashionable. We don't get enough credit from our managers. They normally think like we do magical things in the corner. We just complain about stuff. So they don't understand what we're doing. And it's always quite fun when you do some terrible code, you get it out in time, and then your manager comes up to you and thanks you for it. And you're like, oh God, I feel so dirty, you know? But at the same time, we're like, okay, what do we do to get satisfaction? We go to Hacker News and we build another library to show off to each other. So we have these, like, we work around browser issues. I fix the thing across all the browsers. We make web standards of tomorrow work today. You can now use promises in IE6 and across all browsers. We build solutions to clean up others and make them smaller. So like it's amazing when you got like, I got a plugin for this system and a plugin for that system. That guy used 40 lines of code for that one minus 12 lines of code. The lines of code are more or less irrelevant. I'd rather have 50 lines of code that are readable than 5 lines of code that are really, really clever. Of course, in 2 months' time, you will be gone or somebody else has to maintain it. And hands up. Everybody here had to look at some code a few months later in and said, like, who was that idiot that wrote that? And then you found it was you. You know? And each one of those comes with a don't use in production label. That's always my favorite. You know, there's something wins Hacker News for a whole day, and I was like, that's the most clever pattern I've ever seen. And then at the end, like, don't use in production. So where do I use it? What's this for? Really, it's just showing off to each other. And my goal for today is to teach or to inspire you to learn you how to use JavaScript responsibly and stay up to date. So the plan, fix the JavaScript learning process, stop catering to undead browsers, stop breaking the web, use the amazing tools we have, evolve JavaScript itself. Okay, quite a courageous plan for the next 20 minutes, but yeah, go for it. First, the JavaScript learning process. Back in the days, learning JavaScript worked a bit like this. We looked at the source of websites using ViewSource. We copied and pasted the bits that look like they're responsible for some things. We changed some numbers around. We ran into errors. And then we blamed Internet Explorer. That is, of course, unprofessional. So nowadays, we've been 20 years in. We have much more professional about these kind of things. So we search for solutions on Stack Overflow. We copy and paste the bits that look like they're responsible for some things. We change some numbers around. We run into errors. We blame JavaScript for not being a real language. And then for good measure, we're also blaming Internet Explorer. I call that the full stack overflow developer. And I wrote a blog post about this. And I think we all here should be better than that. There's no lack of free online resources of learning JavaScript. Believe me, there's so many out there. And if you want to have the one that I wrote a lot of stuff and I always go when I want to find things, it's Mozilla Developer Network. MDN JavaScript is the best resource out there. Sorry, Microsoft, but it is. And W3 Schools, they kill kittens and stuff in their free time, so don't go there. It's a great resource when you know what you're doing, but it's not when you want to learn something. It shows you the how, but not the why. And there's nothing worse than giving somebody a solution and then they think they know it. Whereas like when it's breaking again and they're like, they don't know it again, they replace it with something completely different again. Watch talks, do online courses, download and read free books, learn by doing and playing with the language. If you don't know something, analyze it. Share your knowledge. And when you actually teach, you end up learning. And this is something that I learned really, really early on. When I wrote my first big JavaScript book in 2006, I already wrote articles and things like that before. I already used JavaScript professionally for about six years. And I know nothing. You know, I was faking it for 6 years. I was just writing things and, oh, everything worked. And when you had to explain the basics of JavaScript, then all of a sudden I had to analyze what I've been doing the last few years. It was painful. The amount of stuff like, oh my God, I did it this way, really? But it's good as soon as you start explaining something to somebody else, it gets much better. The same way when you write your documentation for your code, before you write your code, you're going to write a lot less code and a lot more sensible code. So think about that one as well. Because the whole concept of code that explains itself is utter bullshit. That's arrogant bollocks. Because people saying code that explains itself assumes that the maintainer or the reader has the same knowledge as you. So code that explains itself is written for you by you. That's fine. Then you don't need documentation. If you need documentation for yourself, then there's another problem going. But for other people, you always need documentation. Second, removing scapegoats, IE is dead. We moved Internet Explorer to Microsoft Edge. We have the open communication if you want to know something about it. We moved 200,000 lines of code out of the browser, and that felt so good. Removing all the things we don't need anymore, like VML, attach event, browser modes, these kind of things that were all exciting in Office 1999, but not after that any longer. And then we removed 300,000. Then we added 300,000 lines of HTML5 goodness, CSS3 goodness, kittens, hedgehogs, and beautiful things. And all the non-standard code is gone. So all of this stuff has been deleted, and we don't need it any longer. Conditional comments, MS prefixed events, and so on and so forth. There's also no more plugins. So everything, the browser itself is the runtime, and that is across all browsers. Flash and these will go away because they are a massive security problem. That was the biggest problem with plugins. They extended the browser and they gave us the opportunity to learn what people need, but now we got an HTML5, all these things natively, and Adobe announced something yesterday already about this, that they're going away from Flash as well to a degree. Stop breaking things. If you think JavaScript, think escalators. That's the best example that I can think about. An escalator cannot break. It just can become a set of stairs. So you can still go to the other floor. You just have to walk up it, much like when you have to go to the other room here where you get presentations, and I can use the lift because I work for Microsoft. But a lift, if a lift breaks down, you're basically in a dark room with people you don't want to be in. But an escalator breaks down, it just becomes a set of stairs. So build moving stairs. Build environments that actually work like stairs, but become more convenient when there's electricity and the thing moves for people. So that's a wonderful example of how to use JavaScript. IE11 is still there, but only on demand. So people rely on non-standard code. I talked about that in the keynote earlier. We needed Internet Explorer 11 still to be on Windows 10, but hidden somewhere in the darkness. People don't find them and don't show it to people. Only when a website needs something that Internet Explorer needs, then it actually, Edge tells you, oh, wait, by the way, open it in IE11 instead. Otherwise, we would not be able to get any payroll done or anything inside Microsoft. So that was the problem. So building a new browser taught us a lot of things. Mostly, there's a lot of pain on the web. We put in these 4,200 interop fixes to make sure we don't break the web because people relied on things that they shouldn't rely on. This is what the what a website looked like. I'm not going to say the name. across different browsers. So it looks beautiful on Safari, on iOS. It looks like what the hell happened on Firefox, and in Internet Explorer, it looks, I hate you. Because that is unusable on a mobile device, absolutely, but people, that's the kind of experience that you got. The reason is people did user agent sniffing. Trying to find out which browser is in use and give you different interfaces for each browser. And that makes no sense because it means you have to maintain three of them instead of just one beautiful one that attaches itself to depending what the browser can do. The user agent strings supposedly should tell you what's happening and which browser it is. The problem is, to be backwards compatible when a new browser comes out, we had to repeat the names of all the other browsers in the new one. So the newer the browser is, the longer the user agent gets. And it has to repeat things like Mozilla 5.0, which is Netscape 6, Gecko, which is Firebird, which was before Firefox, KHTML like Gecko. I like that. It's not like we're not like Gecko, but we're like Gecko. which Conqueror, which is a terrible, terrible browser, and then Chrome had to be like Safari, and Edge had to be like Safari, and Gecko, and Chrome, and so on and so forth. I love it when these kind of things don't work. A slight side effect. Anybody who ever worked on the HTML video, I want to meet the person who came up with one of the APIs in there. There's an API called Can Play Through. So on a video element, you can say like video can play through. And then it asks you, you give it an MP4 a header, for example, like that. You can say, can you play this video? And it's got three different results, probably, maybe, or empty string. Who built this thing? You know, it's like, I don't want to have an API that plays games with me. Like, can you play the video? Maybe. Well, can you or can't you? You know, like, why did I make this call? Anyways, let's detect the mobile. We found this in use on some website. Then they tested the user agent if it's a mobile device or not. So if you want to write it down, take a second. It didn't work with Windows Phone, obviously. Stop doing that. You cannot detect a browser safely, because all browsers lie to you. You can change them to anything else. You can fix code in time. You fix code in time and environment. You might as well code native, because you say, okay, this browser is broken. I'm fixing it by checking its name. So if the browser gets fixed and you just fix it with the name, the fix will never be applied. You still have to keep your code in there for the end of time, and that makes people unhappy. If you really need to fix an issue with a specific browser when there's one bug, and yes, browser bugs happen, make it the browser number, and the version number, and the operating system. Because then, if it gets fixed in the next version, your fix does not get applied any longer. That makes much more sense than saying like, oh, Chrome is going to be crap for the end of life, rather than, or Firefox will be. Keep your helper tools up to date is another important thing. Outdated libraries forced us to optimize old practices in the JavaScript engine. So the JavaScript engines all had to cater for a lot of like MooTools, jQuery's, YOIs, and these libraries out there that people put in there 5 years ago and don't even maintain any longer. So a lot of these things overrode new functionality we wanted to bring into the browser. Badly written polyfills broke new JavaScript functionality and forced us to rename a methods, array contains, for example. And old libraries do browser sniffing and apply old syntax to now standardized functionality. So you got like gradients, for example, in the old Safari version, not the Mozilla, and then standardized version, and so on and so forth. I showed this scanner earlier, and you can come to our booth later on to try this out. Type a URL in there, and it tells you all the things that are going on wrongly in your website. It's also available on GitHub, so if you want to run that behind a firewall, or you don't want to show people, that's another option. And you can also give us forks and give us pull requests if you find tests that we haven't put in there, so please take part of this. Tooling is absolutely amazing nowadays. We get, I always love it when native people say like, well, native people, when people using native code come up to me and say like, oh, web coding, web tooling is terrible. It's not, it's actually quite amazing what you can do with it. Developer tools and browsers are outstanding and give us incredible insights. You get like, when was the last, why is my thing slow, my scrolling? Okay, you keep repainting, you keep interfering with the DOM, you keep changing things that you don't need to change. Memory consumption, you can simulate other devices in developer tools, you can simulate different speeds in developer tools, and all of that is available for free in the browser for you, just by a keyboard shortcut and opening it. We can debug across devices and even convert HTML5 to native apps. Manifold.js, Wallon.js allows you to do that kind of stuff. Editors have linting, built integration, and are even written in JavaScript and run in the browser. Like when you say, for example, I have it in there, JS Fiddle, JS Bin. If you have a problem in JavaScript, make it the smallest problem possible. Take it out of the rest of your website and find if it's still an issue, and then go on Facebook, Twitter, Stack Overflow, Google Plus, wherever you are, and tell people and show people that URL, and let them code with you. Don't try to explain in 6,000 letters what your JavaScript problem is. Like, just show them the problem and let them fix it that way. It's amazing what you can do with JS Fiddle and JS Bin. And JS Bin is great for training as well, because I can code and you can watch on the internet wherever you are while I'm coding. This is pretty amazing. Kind of depressing as well that people do that kind of stuff, but we're sad people. I showed it kind of earlier, Visual Studio Code is pretty amazing. It's open source and cross-platform. It's written in JavaScript itself. It includes debugging and linting. You can learn your mistakes while you write code. And that was the biggest thing with Sublime Text as well. That out of a sudden, when I wrote something wrong, the line was highlighted and said, like, that's not how you do it, before you actually put it in the browser. And I think this is saving us a lot more time than just debugging in the browser itself. It's extensible using JavaScript, so you can write extensions for it. So people already put like CSS linters in there and all kind of cool stuff. And it has GitHub integration. So if you don't know about GitHub or you get confused by GitHub at times, it's pretty cool that when you go into the editor and you just turn around and it shows you the thing. So if I change something here, it said like, okay, this file has changed. It asked me, it showed me what the changes were, and then you can write a message and submit it to Git without having to do anything. And of course, it doesn't show on the screen right now, and you could have told me that, but yeah, okay, whatever. You know.
So it's all the Git, because GitHub is a site, right?
Yes, GitHub is the service, Git is the system under it, yeah. Well done, yeah. Yeah. It's Git, not GitHub. Because there's also other services that use GitHub, like Bitbucket and these kind of things. We also have Node and Express, which is servers running in JavaScript and tools being written in JavaScript. And Express is a middleware that allows you to build websites with it. And there's a great example which allows you to actually build things with it if you don't want to set that up on your computer. And sometimes that's annoying when you go, for example, to a client, you want to something. We want to give you a Node solution. And they're like, okay, what does that entail? And I'm like, can I quickly go to your computer, your command line, install 10,000 things that you don't know about? Is that okay? They're probably just going to say no. But if I say, like, can I quickly have a browser and I can show it to you, you can go to our website here, the service that we have. You have a one-hour test server. You can authenticate with Google, Facebook, or Microsoft. And you can keep your code by forking or downloading it. So I think we have time. So everybody duck, let's do some live demo here. Yeah, let's do the live demo. Why not? Because it might break the presentation, but that might be one thing of doing it. Yay. See, this is how it looked with the Git integration. It's amazing. You should have seen that before, but you didn't. So there's tryappservice.azure.com is where it loads eventually. And it will, oh my God. So there's a video that explains a lot of things that you don't need. And instead you can say like, I want to build a web app. and then I click the next button here. And then I say I want to use Express.js, and I click the create button here. And then I sign in with any of my accounts. So in this case, I use Facebook because who uses Microsoft? That's just terrible. So it now signed in with Facebook, and down there it starts churning away and it's building a server for me now. So it goes to the Azure cloud. One of our interns gets a telephone number. He has to go into the server farm, start up one of the computers, get the floppy disks out and install Node.js and these kind of things for us. The interns that do a good job get food at the end of the evening. The others get to cry, but that's just the way it is in internships. See, that one now gets food, so that's fine. He now created this page here for me, and that one is just a Node.js server running Express.js. Now, if you want to edit this, you don't need an editor as well. You get the Monaco editor that's in the browser itself. And once that's loaded, you can edit directly in the browser. And that works on, as you can see, Firefox here. That works on an Android device. That works on an iOS device. You can just use anything that runs a decent browser to start building websites with. And for some reason, it takes a bit ages. Who's downloading videos here? Yeah, third season of American Horror Story is not good, so stop. Now I got the editor here, which is in essence Visual Studio Code in the browser. So if I now go to my views here, for example, and I do the index.jade, and I can rename something in the file itself, welcome to, and I say, oh, hi. I don't even need to save it. It does it automatically for me. And when I now go over there and I reload it, then it will say, instead of welcome, it will say, oh, hi, and shows you that I'm an amazing developer. But this is really cool to just play with some new technology. And after an hour, this thing will be gone. And you don't have to install anything. You don't have to set up anything on your computer. If you want to keep it, it's, of course, with Git. So you can just go to the command line, and you can go to the terminal and create a new terminal, because I don't know what I did earlier. And then you can say, oh, I downloaded YouTube videos, of course. Let's do another one here. And you can say Git pull. And then it starts downloading the thing. Not Git clone, of course. What am I doing? Hey, live coding. Git clone, and then it starts cloning it and downloading it. So nothing you do in this gets actually lost for you. So it's a pretty cool way to test out some new technologies without having to install anything. And I'm not going to wait for that one now, because it's really painful with the connection right now, because some of you is doing piracy in our office. But not to worry, we will going to find you. And of course, there's other services out there as well. There's like Google Cloud, there's all kind of stuff. But this is pretty sweet that we can do that. The last thing I want to talk about, and I have no idea if I've got time still, but probably I do, is evolving JavaScript itself, because that's something that's close to my heart. JavaScript has grown up. It's called now ECMAScript 6. JavaScript was never a thing. It was always called ECMAScript. JavaScript was just because Java was cool. That's how old it is. And so the connection between Java and JavaScript is the same as ham to hamster. Can be done. Not necessarily the best idea, or car to carpet, these kind of things. The support for ES6 is very encouraging. All browsers now support it, including Opera, including Safari 9, and including like Chrome and Firefox anyways. And Edge is the leading one right now, but this changes every week. I mean, 100% of ES6 support cannot be done at the moment, because there's a few parts of ES6 that are still breaking when they are used together with libraries. And again, we cannot direct the web. If you need to use it right now, you can transpile it with Babel.js. You can use a superset language as well, like TypeScript. And TypeScript is allowing a lot of people to build massive applications without having to wait for ES6. There's also a way to feature test it. There's a library by Kyle Simpson called FeatureTests.io, cleverly enough. And that one is just a library you put in. You say, like, reflect supports all. And then it shows you all the tests, what the browser can do. So if you want to use template strings, you can just check for that is supported. If you want to use promises, you can see if it's supported that way. So that's one way. Much like Modernizer allowed us to use HTML5 functionality in the browser, FeatureTests.io allows you to do ES6 in the browser as well. It's a kind of an uncanny thing because a lot of people want to write ES6 because they want to write in a Java-style programming paradigm as well. So the testing is not for them. But if you just want to spice up your things with arrow functions and template strings, that's probably a simpler way to do that than to transpile everything with Babel in the background. There's a lot of docs and live testing, which is pretty awesome. Like on the website, you have all the descriptions of how something works, what it means, classes, and so on and so forth. And you got a REPL, which is a live replication interface where you can write ES6 and you see how the transpiler converts it to ES5. So that way you can kind of learn what under the hood is happening, because it's kind of cheating. Classes in ES6 are not classes. They're still factory functions in JavaScript in ES5. So we just gave you the idea of classes rather than getting real class inheritance into the language, because that means the language would have had to change. If you want to read books, because books are nice, there's a book by Axel Rauschmeier, which is free to read online, and I'm one of the tech editors on it, so I'm very excited the way he was writing it, because he doesn't only say, this is it and this is the future, but he's like, this is it, this was the discussion about it, this is how it turned out, and this is how to use it. So it's a real a book that explains you the how and not only the why. No, the why and not only the how. Well, something around that. In essence, I think it's just time to love JavaScript, because it's everywhere and it's ready to please, and it's a beautiful language. And it probably, I mean, I've just asked by the .NET magazine in England about the trends of next year, and I think we can get rid of a lot of the helper tools that we have and start writing JavaScript in a mature and more intelligent way than we did before, than haphazardly copying, pasting things together. And more or less that, I think, is all I got time for, so I thank you very much.